Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we're kicking off the month with a noteworthy news kind of show, covering everything a little bit from like the premier Napa Valley festivities, a whole bunch of new mergers, acquisitions, shakeups within the wine industry, all kinds of stuff going on right now that we need to dive into. But first, we always have a handful of announcements, as you all know. Be sure to follow, like, share, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming it. If you could leave a little rating or review, wherever that may be, whether it's in that star format or even writing a comment of some sort, hugely helpful in the algorithm and getting the podcast out and about. It'd be lovely for you to do so. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. At MTGA Wines is the handle that is on YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. We try and keep Instagram and YouTube in particular updated with as much content as possible, because you can do a little bit more stuff with like videos and things on there than just your normal, you know, status updates and posts and things. Although I do love X for that as well these days. Be sure to check out our website, mtgawines.com, so you can submit your questions for our Q&A episodes. We're hot off the heels of that last week. You can slide into our DMs on any of those social networks, but you can also go to our homepage, mtgawines.com. Scroll down to the bottom. There's a lovely little email box you can fill out and submit questions for our monthly Q&A episodes. While you're on our website, please check out our upcoming events. The HBIC herself is going to be in the Carolinas next week. I'm going to be in the Midwest the week after. We also have trips coming up to Texas, Louisiana, Colorado, Missouri, all of the places. Basically, we're ironing out the rest of our 2025 travel. We're super excited. More dates and more events are going to pop up, and we'll be sure to keep you posted. But for those that are currently up there, we're looking at Mount Pleasant outside of Charleston. We're looking at Charlotte. There's one other one I'm missing in the Carolinas. I'm so sorry, but it's on our website. You can also, we're going to be in Columbus, Indianapolis, and Nashville in the next few weeks. So be sure to check all those out. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. Just click on the upcoming events tab or on our shop page. You'll see all the ticket information and details there. All right. Shall we get into it? I mean, we had a great Q&A episode last week. We got into the thick of things between Premier, challenges that we saw with our road going out, which, fun update, they actually filled it all in. We now have access to the property through our own road once again. Whether or not a truck or trailer will get stuck on it is yet to be seen, but I did drive over it yesterday and I did not fall into the creek, which was lovely. So good news, we might be able to resume our normal operations moving forward with bottling. Hopefully in early April is our goal, like around April 7th or so. We'll see if that all happens. I'm not going to hold my breath, though. We already have some contingency plans in place just in case, because, you know, things tend to happen in this industry for no particular reason at all sometimes. Yeah, them is the rope. So I do appreciate all of you who have reached out in regards to the bridge being out, offering support, condolences, or those of you in the industry who have said, like, hey, we have space in our bottling run. You can truck your wine here. That has been hugely helpful. It's one of the things that I do love about this industry more than anything else is the community effort, is that when one of us is in trouble, all of us tend to chip in and be like, hey, what do you need? Let's make it happen and do the best we can with what we got. It's something that really drew me back to this industry and has kept me here, is really that sense of community and that a rising tide raises all ships. And I think that is a very much a trend that is going to have to continue. Perfect segue into the news segment. Many of you are probably still wondering, like, hey, what's the wine industry going to do? As we've been talking about, kind of the kerfuffle that's been happening and the decline in sales, the decline in tourism, all the things that have been occurring over the last year, maybe even year and a half or two, depending on your business and kind of where you're at. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit more because we saw that Constellation Brands, you know, some of you may be familiar with some of their big names, such as the Prisoner Wine Company. They've also been a part of the Duckhorn portfolio, but they're looking to offload that and probably exit from Delicato as well. Some decent news, but Constellation's kind of been moving away from mergers and acquisitions for a while. They also decided to focus more on the cannabis industry up in Canada last year or the year before, once that national deregulation happened up there. So they've been kind of on a different path. But we've also seen a lot of layoffs. In fact, we had a good friend of ours who was, in essence, a lifer at a lovely brand up the Silverado Trail, managing their hospitality program of like 6 or 7 years or so, get axed officially. You're seeing a lot of shakeups in the industry. On top of that, you're seeing brands and larger conglomerates do a little bit more of the pay-to-play game, where they're offering, you know, wineries or drivers or concierge or whatever the case may be, some sort of kickback. Hey, if you bring us business, you know, we will take care of you. We will make sure that you get a little something to sweeten the deal on top of that. A little bit of those pay-to-play shenanigans are back in the industry. All of these things are happening, and it's all a result of what we've been talking about, is this slowdown and kind of the, you know, issues that the wine industry has been seeing economically for at least the last year, if not longer. And I think I want to dive into that just a touch. I know we've talked a lot about it, but since it is, you know, still very fresh in everyone's minds, and I want to relate this to what we saw during Premier Napa Valley, actually, because that was the event 2 weeks ago. We touched on it ever so briefly in our Q&A episode last week. But I got to say, you know, the overall vibe, when you have like that many, you're talking like thousands of people in the industry all coming together over the course of 5 days to like work and do things between tastings and experiences, to buy wine, to support brands that they love, the industry that they love, the vibes were good. So I'm really kind of curious to see how a lot of this shakes out. Now, obviously, on the broad scope side of things, things aren't so great. You're seeing some businesses just roll up. You saw Brian Arden roll up last week or the week before, although from what I understand, that was some other issues that have been happening with the investors or family or whomever was involved. They were acquired by Albert, and they're now in, you know, ownership of that property. I mean, you've seen stuff like that, and stuff is still shaken down, and people are still having a hard time. But what was weird about Premier Napa Valley 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago now, was that everyone seemed to be pretty upbeat. Everyone kind of recognized, like, yeah, this is a tough time. Yeah, this is, you know, a little shaky, but we're here. We're doing the thing. We're making it happen regardless. We're being present, and we're still trying to move the needle forward, then take these giant steps back. And it's that kind of optimism that I really appreciate. I'm kind of a persistent pessimist. It's really hard for me to see the bright light at the end of the tunnel a lot of times. It's easy for me to get very doom and gloom about things. It's what's rattling around in my head more often than not. I project way too much. But to see a lot of people kind of banding together to do great things, that's really outstanding. And yeah, times are tough, things are rocky, but there are a lot of people out there doing their best to support one another and build long-term lasting relationships and partnerships within this industry. And I think that's a really outstanding thing. Now, it's going to be interesting, you know, if you see, you know, more layoffs, you know, especially when it's someone who's been there for a long time, who may or may not be like the face of a brand, that could do more harm than good. But I understand the mentality from some businesses of like, hey, we need budget cuts. You know, who has the highest salary that we could potentially part ways with? And that shit happens sometimes, you know. And for unfortunately, that's a tough pill to swallow. But them might be the ropes in some situations. Whether or not that business does better or worse in the long term, we'll have to wait and see, obviously. But if you're losing one of your best people because of budget cuts, that doesn't bode particularly well. The same way where if you're paying concierge and drivers and whatnot to bring you business, that doesn't bode particularly well. I've had to deal with that like a handful of times where certain drivers have been like, hey, so we'd love to bring you more people. And this is kind of typically how we organize it, you know, based on, you know, what they buy. We like to earn, you know, kind of a commission of some sort. It's almost like they're trying to do like this brokerage thing where it's like, hey, we're like brokering people to you, so we get X percentage of their purchase. And I've been like, no, that's not how we do business. It doesn't seem to be beneficial whatsoever. Number one, there are a lot of people that don't do that. And in my experience, the second other people find out you are doing that, it turns them off in a big way. in my experience as well, it's typically the least talented that are asking for that kind of stuff, that are trying to push that stuff forward, and the people that, frankly, I don't want to be doing business with. I've had a handful of individuals that I've dealt with on kind of the referral side of things over the years that have kind of like tried to push that into our court, and I'm like, no, sorry, this is a do not pass go, do not collect $200 sign here. We're not playing your bullshit game. If you want to bring people our way because you love what we do, you want to support our brand, and you know that your clientele are going to have the best time they could possibly have with us, and it puts you in a really good light for referrals down the road and them recommending you, perfect. That's lovely. I'm sure as hell not going to cut into my margins when you haven't done the same. This is kind of the fun thing about that particular little avenue, is that every time I've been asked, like, hey, or kind of, you know, prompted, like, hey, maybe you give us, you sweeten the deal a little bit for us. I've been like, okay, cool. So if I send you people and they book with you, clients of ours, let's say they book with you, they reference MTGA, we got to get out there and do this with them. Am I going to get a kickback? Do I get money for that? Do you give me some sort of, you know, preferred pricing or discount for them? Are you doing us a solid? And the answer is typically no. So it's like, okay, like, so you're asking for everything and we're getting the privilege of working with you. You can, you know, pound sand, buddy. Like, let's get out of here. And frankly, it's far more telling if you're going to have to kind of coerce or bribe people to bring you business. You're in a lot of trouble business-wise to begin with. Like, let's be honest here, right? If you're doing the thing and your business has actually got a good head of steam and you're moving forward, and yeah, maybe times are tight, but you're willing to make some cuts and sacrifices where you got to make sure that you continue moving forward, fair. If you're in a position where you're literally having to try and bribe people to bring you business, it doesn't bode well. And news like that travels real fast around this valley. And frankly, it means you've got some bigger problems that you need to sort out, because I guarantee you, I mean, I would be surprised, thoroughly surprised, if someone was able to actually bring in enough business using those tactics to actually do themselves any kind of favors. I highly doubt it. It's not something I've seen. It's kind of gross. It makes me feel gross anyway. But hey, it's not my business. Anyone out here can do what they want to do. There have been plenty of wineries that have done that in the past. Hell, there was one through a friend of ours that at one point, this was a few years ago, that was like, hey, if you bring me enough business, I'll take you to dinner at French Laundry. And I'm like, I can't compete with that. That's kind of shady as fuck. But I mean, good on you if you got that in your budget and you've got someone who's a multi-millionaire or billionaire behind you that's, you know, willing to, you know, sign on with something like that. I mean, fair enough, I guess. But it's just, it's kind of icky. I don't like it. I would rather the organic introduction for like our businesses in particular. If you want to play games, go to the playground. I don't want to be involved, kind of thing. But this is the world we're living in right now. People are literally shaking trees trying to get money to fall out of them, it feels like. And they're not having a whole lot of luck. So a lot of stuff is getting thrown at the wall. But again, going back to a week and a half ago, with all these industry people from all over the country, all over the world in this valley, the vibes were very positive. Yeah, maybe some of the auction lots didn't go for as much as they used to. This is not the boom of the wine industry that we saw from 2011 to like 2019. It's been unbridled growth out here from a business standpoint for close to like 11 to 12 years, depending on, you know, how you've been going at it. I mean, shoot, we've been the beneficiary of that. We saw amazing growth even since 2018-19 to where we got to in 22-23. It was bonkers, to the point where I'm like, oh my god, this is actually like a real business now. We can actually pay our bills and not be stressed. We don't have to carry a credit card balance. We can actually do things and invest and buy more barrels, buy more equipment, like improve our processes. This is outstanding. And that's screeched to a halt a little bit. We're having to be really, really frugal now again. But it was about time for this correction. And if you were looking at the last, let's say, 5 years, before, let's say it's 2023, let's go back in time. If you're looking at the last like 5-6 years, you know, back to, you know, 2017, 2018, and that's what you're basing your entire strategy off, is like just unbridled growth and things kicking up, even with COVID and fires and everything else thrown into the mix, I think you're doing it wrong. You know, 2008 to 2011 was not that long ago. long enough that a lot of people forgot what happens when time gets tough economically, when there's a squeeze, when there's a correction, and albeit that was, you know, a big recession that had occurred. But you saw the people that folded, and you saw the people that survived. And that's what's going to happen again right now. You're going to see plenty of layoffs. You're going to see plenty of brands fold. You're going to see this kind of stuff happen because there are plenty of people that are just out over their skis and they don't really have a good way forward. You know, they're going to have to offload certain assets. They're going to have to axe people. They're going to have to try and correct course here. And some of them simply aren't going to be able to do it. Or for some of them, it just might not be worth doing. This industry is a grind. It's very tough. It's damn near impossible to make it in this industry unless you got a cool $1 billion in the bank backing your project in this day and age, especially when it comes to Napa. That's just how it is if you're buying into this industry right now. And it's a challenge. We welcome you to come into this crazy world of ours and join us. But the times are going to get tough every once in a while, just like they are right now. And you better have a halfway decent plan. Man, the wine industry news has just been interesting. We're always kind of like sitting on the edge of our seat in times like these, just waiting to see who the, you know, next brand or next person on the chopping block is. And it's a damn shame. But we will get through this. I guarantee it. Wine's not going to go away tomorrow. I think we're going to be fine. Yes, it's going to take some time. Yes, it's going to be challenging. But if you can get through it, I think you'll be all right. And I think this is how you get through it. I want to like touch on, you know, where I think people are being successful. And I think many of you would agree with me on this, is that at this point in time, you know, where money is a little tighter, you know, groceries are more expensive, you know, we're kind of sorting through this, you know, wishy-washy time economically, is that people are now looking for more value in what they're purchasing on a day-to-day basis. Even if that means spending a little bit more on something, they might buy less of it. We've touched on this before that, you know, the trading up for quality versus down for quantity seems to be the trend. And I think that's what's going to continue. And I hope it's something that does from just the consumer nature of this country, beautiful country that we live in. I think that many, many people have kind of overspent and overindulged for a long, long time. And this was something, you know, this is hot off the heels. I'm recording this on Wednesday morning of March 5th. We watched the speech to the nation last night. And one of the responses we saw was a car dealership, you know, talking about having to raise their prices and sell new vehicles. And this is a question that I, you know, pose to many of you out there, is that a new car is always kind of nice, right? But my first thought, because I've gone through this, because I look at my work truck and I love my work truck. It's basically a bare bones Dodge, like tradesman model. Like it's got Bluetooth and an AM radio. There's no backup cameras. It's cloth seats. It's not a great stereo system. There's no touch screen. There's nothing remote. The seats aren't power seats. Like there's no running boards. It is as bare bones get. The bed's not even lined, for God's sake, okay? Like, it's as cheap and cheerful as you can get with a truck that needs to be a work truck. Do I want another truck that's higher quality, more bells and whistles, all the things? Yeah, absolutely. Do I need it? No. Right? And I think that's where, you know, we need to get to as consumers when it comes to like broad scope kind of things. This is a little bit of my soapbox here, but hang with me. I'm going to tie it back to wine, I promise. Is that the difference between need and want are two very different things. And I think people are starting to understand, hopefully, a little bit more the things that they truly want versus the things they truly need. And in a world where wine is not necessarily a need, I know many of us would disagree with that. I think that wine is a necessary part of life. I know many of you listening to this think that wine is a necessary part of life. But for the overwhelming majority of people, it's not. It's a luxury. It's something that's nice to have when you're entertaining or when you're out to dinner. It's fun to have wine around the house. I get that. That's amazing. So in a world where consumers don't necessarily need the product you're selling, how can you make them bridge that gap between the want and the need, right? And I think the brands that are doing a really great job of connecting with people, being present, trying to, you know, this sounds a little weird, but be a part of their clients' lives in some way, shape, or form on more than just a, hey, we're buying your product level. I think those are the companies that succeed, whether it's a small business or a big one for that matter, right? Like, you don't need to use Google to search things. You don't need a Gmail account necessarily. You don't need an iPhone. But if you don't have an iPhone, all your friends are going to talk shit because you're the one with the green text messages. So it's like, oh, what are you going to do? Right? You could easily buy a Samsung whose technology is easily, what, a year, 2 years ahead of where the iPhone is? But a lot of people don't. Why is that? Right? So this want versus need conversation and kind of where this industry is going is something that everyone is going to have to kind of reconcile. Is that if people want to be in the world of wine, but don't need to be in the world of wine, how can we make it as approachable and accessible and personal as possible to actually connect with people? You know, going back to like, hey, paying people to bring you business out to the winery, that's not how you connect with people, right? Your hope is that, number one, the consumer is never going to know. The people riding in those vehicles or being referred to those wineries, they're never going to know that there's a kickback in place. But it's going to do a disservice to them, likely that brand, and the industry as a whole, because this is what ends up happening, is that the folks that actually participate in shit like that, they say, okay, well, here's my route. I'm just going to plug and play these wineries because I know that I'm just going to get a kickback from this no matter what. And the wineries and businesses that do this will try and hold people accountable. They will track sale, who's bringing them people, how many people, you know, how many wine club signups they're getting, how many, you know, dollars worth of wine they're actually purchasing. And, you know, they'll try and hold people accountable. But I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of minnows and less big fish that show up because people are just going to keep going, you know, to try and find, you know, this little incentive that they think is worth their time. You know, this is the kind of stuff where it doesn't build the relationship. It doesn't build the brand even necessarily. These are the kinds of things that are detrimental more often than not. Oh, hey, Freddie, what's going on, big guy? You know, this is the kind of stuff where you see like folks kind of true colors. You saw this in 08 to 11 as well. You saw this during the dot-com bust. You've seen this in every rocky period that the wine industry has gone through. You see people react and sometimes overreact, but maybe that overreaction is just simply a natural response because of where that business is in the first place. It's gonna be a very interesting time over the next probably, I mean, I'm guessing this year for sure, moving into next year, depending on how this whole tariff situation shakes down. Let's get even into like kind of the bigger, broader scope of things now, because we've talked a lot about, you know, pricing and what impacts, you know, the cost of a bottle of wine to you. I'll tell you right now, there's not a lot of glass suppliers that are based in the good old US of A here. Many people source their glass from China. They source it from Central or South America, even from Italy and other places. So if a lot of that is coming in from outside and that gets hit with a tariff of some sort, depending on what happens and what the next like 30 to 60 days or however things start to shake out, I mean, it ain't gonna get any cheaper to make wine across the board, right? So there's a lot of stuff working against the industry outside of kind of the anti-alcohol trend, just the general cost of doing business after the supply chain crisis a couple years ago. And now we're staring down the barrel of like a really rough patch on top of potential higher costs on top of it. You know, it's going to be crazy. I'm not going to say it's going to be. It could be really crazy, right? And brands that are set up and have this, you know, connection with their people, I think are going to fare really well. the ones that kind of stand true to who they are, the ones that don't do a bunch of deep discounts or deals or special and kind of like coerce sales. If you can avoid doing that kind of stuff and just kind of, you know, stem the tide and hold strong to what you've been doing for X amount of years so far, you're going to be far better off in the long run than if you try and wheel and deal right now. That's exactly how you reset your brand image. It's how you reset your pricing. It's how you reset your consumer perception and expectation. It's a great way to erode what you've built as a business. And I'm not just talking about wine here. We're talking about anything. I'll give you a great example, actually. And it's when a great deal actually like turned me off from buying something. I don't have like a watch problem. I have probably more than I need, but like nothing super fancy or expensive. Like the watches I have typically are like, I have a couple like Thomas Earnshaws and like the Movement MVMT watches, like things that are maybe somewhere between like 60 and like 150 bucks. Like that's like the realm I play in. And, you know, there's maybe the one timepiece that I want to like splurge on. And there's this Australian brand, I think Panzera, I think it is. And I'm like, the watches look great. It's an Australian brand, which is kind of cool. Like, let's check them out. They look nice. And they just had like their big like birthday sale. And as soon as I signed up for the mailing, it's like, oh, it's our, you know, birthday anniversary special. Like here to get special price. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not above a good deal. Let's go ahead and check this out. And what has happened since that time is been like one discount code after another has been sent my way. And it's like, okay, well, this discount's like not special. This isn't like a great like first time buyer special. This is something that looks like I can just buy this anytime I want and probably get a good deal on it almost anytime I want. Maybe it's 40 or 30% off versus 50% off or 70, or I don't know where their pricing lays. But once you get bombarded by stuff like that, it's like, okay, well, I guess I can just do this whenever I want. And it's not that it turned me off from buying their product because I'm still interested, but now I'm not in a hurry, right? The demand isn't there anymore. I don't need to have it. I want to have it. Had it been a really great price and available only on a short-term thing and I needed to act now, I probably would have had some sort of fire lit under me. This is something that we do with, say, like our Cabernet Franc release, some of which, you know, many of you actually probably received in your wine club shipment this last February, is that we make less than 300 bottles of it. You know, typically once we get through the wine club shipment, I might have a couple of cases left. If that, we're talking less than a couple of dozen bottles, like laying around. Because, you know, some people cancel their shipments and things like that nature. So, you know, you end up with bottles here or there. Which is nice because I can share that with more people. But for those that passed on that wine, in the next, shoot, what time is it? By the end of this month, probably, there's going to be no Cab Franc left. And if you wanted some, you're going to have to wait at least a full calendar year. And even then, we might not have enough for you come next February. So it's, you know, a marketing strategy on our part. Number one, I don't want to make that much Cab Franc. It's super expensive to make. It's a tough grape to work with. I love working with it and having it as an option. I really do. But it's also not meant to be kind of a core product for us. This is kind of a cool, fun thing that we do specifically for our wine club and our mailing list. And we're not going to make a whole bunch more of it. We're not certainly not going to discount it or offer specials on it because there's a very finite amount of it available. And if you didn't jump on it in February, there's little to no chance that you're going to be able to get some in March. That's just kind of how the cookie crumbles. It creates that demand. It keeps people interested and enthralled with what you're doing, kind of the new exciting thing that you might have going on with your label. You know, so, you know, when it comes to like the strategies of working through these tough times, like people really need to think about like discounting and running specials and how that's actually going to impact the demand that you think you have. Like this is such a complicated issue across, you know, where your business is at, what you feel as though are the marketing strategies and things that you can do or the tools you have that could potentially like propel you forward and get you through this rough patch. But I think there are far too many businesses that assume that people need these things versus what they want. So it kind of goes both ways. You know, everyone wants a good deal and a good value. Is that something that you've already created? Is that something you're already doing? Right? Could you do better? Would it actually make sense for you to say, hey, our normal discount on a case is 30, we're going to up it to 40%. That's not something we do. I can't afford to do that. But, you know, that's what some brands will do in this rocky time. They'll say, hey, we're just going to ramp, we're just going to crank all this up. And what we saw, you know, after 2008 to 11 is the brands that did that kind of stuff put themselves in a tough position, because now the customer expectation is like, oh, hey, a year ago, 2 years ago, I was getting 30% off this wine. Where's my 30% off now? And they completely reset their pricing structure. That's a tough place to be as a business when you're supposed to be at X and you've discounted it to Y and now you're stuck there, right? It's the way it works. And that is just how the cookie crumbles when it comes to marketing and sales in that realm. I've talked a bunch about the JCPenney example when they were going to stop discounting, just offer just the one price. But people loved seeing the discount. They needed to see the discount. So they reset and said, hey, we're not going to just give you, here's $50, but now it's 25, but now it's 12 and a half. People needed to see the big red line through the old price. And that's their marketing strategy. Even though they know full well, all they want is $12.50 for it. They don't give a shit about that $50 or that $25. They're going to sell it for $12.50 no matter what. But the big red X through the old price looks pretty to people. And it's very enticing. That's how that works, right? And if that's going to be your strategy, that's just fine. Here's the pitfall, though, the big pitfall, is that the majority of wineries, I think, really have not planned that. It's not in their budget. Let me give you a great example. Let's say you're expecting to sell $100,000 worth of a particular wine, but times are tough, right? You're going to offer people a discount and say, hey, you know what? If you buy this wine, we're going to give you 10% off of it, right? So initially you're budgeted, you know, your estimated sales are going to be that 100K realm, right? But let's say you sell all of it because, hey, people are like, this is a great deal. Let's buy it. And instead of selling that 100K, you only sell 90. Now, $10,000 might not sound like a big difference to some of you, but let me put that into perspective. And for those of you watching, I'll show you this because I know the math, but I'm going to show it on my calculator because I feel it's more impactful. For those of you listening, you're just going to hear the number. But say $10,000, right? Boom, on the calculator here. Now, the average, like let's say French oak barrel, if you're buying new barrels every year, right? Let's say it's $1,400 once you pay, you know, once you convert it to euros, or actually let's even go back. Let's say it's $1,300. It's probably closer to like $1,300, give or take, roughly, if you're buying new French oak. $10,000 divided by $1,300 is about $7.7. So that's 7 3/4 barrels that you can't buy now, right? So let's say you're someone like us that only ever has like 50-ish, 40 to 50 barrels, maybe even less than that, maybe somewhere between 35 to 45 barrels from a 50-year season. You're talking about a significant percentage of barrels that we can no longer buy. Now extrapolate that to, you know, $200,000 in revenue, to $500,000, to $1 million in revenue. And all of a sudden you start discounting when you didn't expect to. And now you have a huge budget shortfall because you didn't plan for this. Man, I've seen plenty of brands get in hot water with that because they just don't expect how that discount rate is going to impact their bottom line. It's great to offer. It's a great marketing tool and potentially a sales tool. But when it hits your bottom line, all of a sudden you can't afford to do certain things because you didn't plan for it. And that's where brands, like in this day and age and where they're at, that's where they will start to get into hot water, is when they're just doing these gut reactions to how the market is, rather than actually drilling down into their bottom line and understanding how that's going to impact their business long term. Oh, the news is a flurry with all this kind of stuff over the last week. Between, you know, more mergers, acquisitions, people selling stuff off, people closing, people trying to figure out what is our way forward? How are we going to act and operate as a business moving forward? I think there are a lot of people right now making a lot of mistakes when they don't need to be. Unfortunately, they're acting with their gut and they're not checking it at all. You know, there needs to be a balance there. You need to have a better idea of what is actually like going on and how it's going to impact your business overall. Now, I can't shake my crystal ball hard enough to figure all that out. I'm trying, believe me. It's more like a crystal, like eight ball, right? It just says yes, no, maybe, and perhaps. But, you know, it's you kind of got to take the temperature. And going back to what I said about Premier Napa Valley and kind of the vibe, the fact that people were excited to be there, that there was a lot of positivity, I think a lot of great momentum going into this year, I think that bodes really well. And I think that's where we as an industry really need to stay, is just be diligent, be forward thinking, be positive. You know, vibes can only get you so far, but they can certainly help. And when it comes to whether or not your business is going to be successful through these rough times, and when you see the news blotter of all kinds of issues happening here, there, and everywhere, what are you doing? What are you dialing in? What are you cutting? What are you saving on? What are you banking on? How are you going to change or alter your operations to ensure that you're going to survive this? Does that discount make sense? Does bribing people to come out to your winery make sense? You know? Does holding the course make more sense? Does decreasing production a little bit and reducing your cost basis make sense? Does axing the face of your brand make sense? Hopefully not, because that's me and Brittany. I don't think we're going to fire one or the other of us. We joke about that from time to time, but yeah, clearly not going to happen. It's going to be, as always, it's going to be an interesting time. But this news cycle continues to be rocky. It continues to be interesting. And I think there's going to be more to come, for better or for worse. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. Those were my random ramblings to start the month. I think I'm going to start doing this at the beginning of each month. Just kind of have like a, here's a vibe check of where we're at. Here's what we're seeing in the industry. Here's how we're operating. And just kind of like get some stuff off my chest. It feels nice. Very selfishly, it's very cathartic. Hopefully it informs you a little bit of kind of what's going on and the inner workings and kind of the underbelly of the wine industry, which is stuff I love touching on, whether it's the business side, the winemaking side, of course, wine clubs like we talked about a couple weeks ago and how they continue to be so important. You know, there's a lot of stuff to dive into. And, you know, I think it's good to kind of paint the corners here and see where the conversation goes. So be sure, again, like, subscribe, share the show with your friends. Be sure to give us a little rating or review if you have a hot second to do so. We'd love it if that were the case. Follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's Instagram, YouTube, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, our wine club. You can check out the upcoming events that we have in the Carolinas and the Midwest this month. We'll also be posting more events, as I mentioned, Texas, Louisiana, Missouri. Y'all are on notice. Colorado as well, actually. Y'all are on notice. We're coming your way later this year. Please stay tuned for more updates. I promise we'll have those for you here shortly. Have an amazing rest of your day, everybody, week, and we will see you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.